Greetings, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Authors Access, where authors get published and published authors get successful. Hi, I'm Irene Watson, and I am the managing editor of Reader Views in Austin, Texas.
And I'm Victor Folkman with Loving Healing Press in Ann Arbor, Michigan. It's November 20th, 2008, and welcome to episode number 74 in our series. Tonight's topic is Developing Your Passion of Writing as a Career, and our special guest who will be joining us this hour is Suzanne Lawrence. You can learn more about our guest on the Authors Access website, which is authorsaccess.com. Please send your questions and comments to info@authorsaccess.com. Now tonight we're on the line with Suzanne Lawrence, who is a full-time children's author, freelance writer, and the working writer's coach. She teaches children's writing for the Institute of Children's Literature based in West Reading, Connecticut, and is the founder and director of the National Writing for Children Center. Suzanne is the author of 20 published books and has written many articles for a variety of magazines, including Family Fun, Kansas City Weddings, Instructor Magazine, Children's Writer, and many others. She hosts her own talk show about children's books called Book Bites for Kids every weekday afternoon on blogtalkradio.com. Suzanne Lawrence offers a variety of coaching programs via telephone, teleclasses, and email for writers who want to turn their love of writing for children or adults into a part-time or full-time career. Well, good evening, Suzanne.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Well, it's great to have you. And, you know, many of us, and I dream of being writers, full-time writers. And what's interesting is when I was listening to Victor talking about your career as a full-time writer, I'm bringing to mind some of the kids that we have reviewing for us that have already a vision of being in the, you know, in as writers and creating that as a career. And I'm thinking, wow, this really could happen to be a full-time fledged writer. So how did this all happen for you?
Good question. Actually, I was a full-time classroom teacher for many years. I taught English and social studies and reading in the classroom. And one summer, my school was going to close, and I knew I was going to be reassigned to another school. And as is often the case in the district where I worked, I felt they weren't going to reassign me the new school at the beginning of the year. They would sort of not let me know until school had already started. And I would just be coming into a classroom sort of in the middle of the year. And sure enough, that's what happened. They called me after school had already started and said they had reassigned me to another school and this is where I was going to be. And, you know, I just had already anticipated that. So over the summer, I decided I was going to get enough freelance writing jobs that I wouldn't have to go back to school if it turned out that I wasn't assigned to a classroom by the beginning of the year. So what I did was, as soon as school was out that 1st of June, I just got busy looking for writing jobs. So by the time I got that call in September and school had already started, it was about 2 weeks after school had started, I just told them, well, no, thank you. I think I'm not going to come back and teach. And they were just like, what? How can you just stop working? But I said, well, I'm going to write now. So that's what I decided to do. And I've been doing that for about 10 or 12 years now.
Wow. So it actually came that easy for you that you were just able to get that many freelance jobs?
Well, I wouldn't say it was easy. It was quick, but it was a very concentrated effort. And so what I've done is I meet people that say, well, gosh, how did you get that to happen so quickly? You know, like you just said, that it happened quick and easy. It wasn't necessarily easy. It was a lot of work. But I knew I had just 3 months, which was basically, what, 12 weeks. So I turned that into my 12-week coaching program. So I thought, well, what I did, anybody can learn how to do. So I just made that into my 12-week Working Writers Coaching Program, and it's a very intensive program showing writers what I did to start my career, and they can follow the same process and do the same thing I did.
So can we get a little sneak preview of what in this coaching course that really worked for you?
Well, what worked for me was, first of all, getting all my material lined up, where I had a writer's resume. I had written things, maybe not even for pay, but things that I had a byline for that I could put up. And so I got my materials in order. I got my resume in order. I learned how to write a cover letter. I learned how to do a query letter before I even got started. And so in my coaching program, that's part of what I help people do, is learn how to get a resume together. And many times people who think they want to become writers as a career don't have a lot of stuff to put on their resume right at the beginning. But I show them ways with the internet and just various things available today where you can get a resume built with some writing credits just almost immediately. And so once you've got that, and then you learn the sort of ways to make a query letter stand out so that editors will take notice, and you also know how to write a cover letter so that when you're applying for jobs online, you get a response to your, ad that you respond to, you get them writing you back. So those are some of the things I show people how to do. Also, I always tell people that in today's world of publishing, if you just think, well, I want to be a full-time writer and I want to write novels and stay home, that doesn't happen instantly. In fact, you're not going to sell one novel, most probably, and make a living off of that one book. You're going to have to build readership and write several books before you ever make a living just from writing a novel. So what I show them in my course is the other things that you have to write, but you can do that at the same time that you are working on, say, a novel or a nonfiction book, if writing books is what you really want to do ultimately to make a living.
Wow, Suzanne, it sounds like a really grounded and practical course you've got there.
Yeah, well, that's, you know, I thought if I can do this, anyone can do it. And I knew that many people just, they sort of defeat themselves before they get going because they start second-guessing themselves. They'll think, well, gosh, if I was supposed to be a freelance writer, it wouldn't be this hard. Or, you know, if I were supposed to be a writer, the writing would come easy. I'd sit down and words would flow off the page. And once they realize that, no, that doesn't really happen for any of us, it's hard work getting started for everyone who wants to write. And even seasoned authors don't just sit down and the words flow all the time. But there are tricks and things you learn that help you start writing and to stay writing and to finish a project. And so that's what I help people do so that they can create that writing career that they've always wanted. Because I truly believe anyone who really loves to write, and there's a difference between people who love to write and someone who loves to have written something. You know, I love to sit down and really polish things off and just work and work and work on a piece until it really shines. And many people think they like to write, but they just want to write something one time. They don't like to rewrite and polish. So I help many people in my coaching program decide if a writing career really is for them. Do they really love to write, or do they just want to have written something? And I'm not saying everyone needs to become a full-time writer who thinks they want to, but it's good to know that, well, no, I really thought I wanted to be a freelance writer, but that's really not the life for me. Because then you can go on to find what it is you truly want to do when you know for sure it's not writing.
Exactly. Let's talk about some of the pitfalls and mistakes that people commonly make when they're transitioning into full-time freelancing.
I think many times people don't determine what they like to write about, what their true passion for writing is. They just think, okay, I'll write anything and everything. And they go out and they look for jobs, and then they don't really like some of the things they're doing. Like, there are all kinds of jobs for people who will write resumes for other people, for other business professionals. So many people think, okay, I'll start a resume writing business, which that can be a great way to make an income. If you love interviewing people, getting questionnaires for them where they fill out information, and then you translate that information into a professional resume that's going to get that person a job. But if that's not the kind of writing you really like to do, then I wouldn't suggest that's what you start doing to make a living. Try to find the kinds of things you like to write. And so that's what I help writers discover too. What is it that you really like to write? And what is it that you really want to work on each day? And are there some things in the meantime that you would be willing to do that are not so terrible in terms of writing until you maybe get your career established as a fiction writer, because it's much easier to sell nonfiction than fiction, and there's a greater demand for that. So I think one of the things is you've got to find out what kind of nonfiction you'd like to write and get started with that. Another thing people see, I see people doing all the time, is they get these little online jobs where they're paid $25 or $15 or $10 to write things online, and they think, oh, well, I can just do, you know, 100 of those in a week, and then that'll be enough money, even if it's just $10. But it just, you know, just sucks the life out of them. It just gets so tired, because they're working on all those little things. It's much better to find one project that pays you a lot of money as opposed to all these piddly little things that they're paying you peanuts for.
Exactly. Those are some really great points. Let's talk for a little bit about children's writing, because I know that's your passion. What are some of the challenges that are unique to working in that genre?
Well, I think everyone tends to believe at first that children's writing is easy.
Yeah.
And that anyone can write for children. And a lot of people that I see are coming to me and they think, well, I want to write for children. And many times these are older people, grandparents or parents, and they want to write because they've had children or they have grandchildren and they want a story down that they think will be perfect for children. And what they don't bother to do is learn the tricks of the trade for writing for children, because there are very specific things that you have to do in children's writing that you don't necessarily have to do in writing for adults. And until you learn what those things are, you may write a story, but it's not marketable because it doesn't follow all those guidelines that you need to have in place when you're writing for children. And I'll just give you one example. For children's fiction, for very young children, editors want to see stories written from a single point of view. And they want that point of view character to be a child, not an adult. And many times I will read stories that are written by an older person, and the grandpa is the point of view character. And he's telling the whole story. Well, kids don't want to read a story about a grandpa. They don't mind if a grandpa's in the story, but they want to hear the story from the child's point of view, from the grandchild's point of view. And that's real hard for many people to realize at first, unless they've taken some kind of training or taken a course in writing for children to understand that. Another thing people will do is they'll just flip-flop points of view. I mean, you'll get a point of view, the story told from every character's point of view, including the dogs. And editors don't want to see that for young children, because they know it can be confusing for young readers when you're changing point of view. So until you learn these things and you stick with them, if you're sending a story in for a magazine or even a book and you want to try to get it published and you've switched points of view or your main character is an adult, unless you're really, really good at sort of breaking the rules, you're not going to have much of a chance of having your work published. And I think that's one of the pitfalls that many beginning children's writers face, is because they don't get any training. They just think, oh, children's writing is easy. I've read picture books. I read to my kids all the time. I'm just going to start writing for kids.
You know, Suzanne, I find this really interesting, because we have Read Reviews Kids, where we only have kids review the kids' books, you know, books mm-hmm. written for kids. And what you're saying is so true, and the kids actually pick up on this. What I find extremely interesting is that I don't think that all editors and publishers really take that point of view, is what you had said, because we have, these kids are honest. They know exactly what they want to read. They know what character development is. They know everything. Mm-hmm. And it's amazing how many times that they will point to the author about, you know, lack of character development, or, like you say, it's jumping around. And so it makes me wonder, though, what happens? Why, you know, why are some publishers actually letting some of this stuff through?
Well, I think a great deal of it is there are many self-published books out now, and basically the authors, you know, can just sort of tell the story the way they want to tell it. Then I think there are other small publishers that have popped up that maybe are just people who have started self-publishing themselves and then they've decided to create their own publishing company and they've got other people that they're publishing under them as well. Or some of the newer, smaller publishing houses just don't really know what it is that makes a good book. You know, they don't have the editors who've been at this all along and have sort of established the guidelines for writing for children. And when you think about writing for children, it just makes sense. Not so much about, you know, this has just definitely got to be this way because it's children's writing. It's got to be that way because, like you said, it's what children want, what they enjoy reading. And also, it's developmentally appropriate for the age reader you're writing it for. And that's different. An adult reader can pick up more cues and clues and different things than a child reader can. And oftentimes when you're writing things like I write beginning readers and early chapter books and different things like that, picture books. You know, you've got to write them knowing that the children are going to read these or hear the stories as they are read to them by an adult are using my materials to learn how to read. And so there are certain things in these stories, like prediction. You know, you make a little story, a picture book, and it has certain predictable qualities in the text that make the children think, oh, I bet the, you know, like, just think of common fairy tales when the three little pigs. After that wolf goes to the first pig's house and blows it down, then the kids that are listening to the story goes, oh, he's going to go to the next pig's house, you know. And that's prediction, and it's leading the child through the story. And so that's something you learn how to do when you learn to write for children. You learn how to use techniques like the core of three is what that's called, where you put instances of three in your story, and they help pull the reader through it, and they also give it structure and rhythm to the text. So, you know, it's just so fun to me to learn all these things, and even if publishers are accepting things that really don't include some of these wonderful elements of good children's writing, it's just too bad, but it's just such a wonderful thing when you know that stuff and you use that as guidelines to help you write the best stories and books you can.
Exactly, and I'm going to make one more comment and then we're going to move on to something else because I could spend this whole hour, you know, on my soapbox with children's books, but I just also find that many times our kids that review for us, this is the first time that any child has ever reviewed the book. Which mm-hmm. also I find very interesting that, you know, a book is written for a child, like you say, and there's all these elements that should be written in it, but a child is never given the opportunity to look at it before it goes into publication, which is, I think is very unfortunate because then that's when they do get reviews, like, you know, no character development, or it's about the grandpa instead of about the child that mm-hmm. they want to read about, so... Mm-hmm. And so, moving on here to, now, back to freelance writing. So, there's obviously ways to get your name out there. And, you know, the editors, or whoever you're going to be working for, or providing the materials to, need to get to know you, need to get to know your name. And so, mm-hmm. what are some simple steps that prospective freelance writers can do to get their name out there?
Well, I always tell people that it used to be you wrote a book and then you became famous. But nowadays it's more like you become famous and then you get asked to write a book. So if you're not famous, you've got to think of what can I do to sort of become semi-famous so somebody will know who I am. And that's basically just creating your professional platform. So you create your professional platform by being highly visible. And then when you get that visibility, you become more credible because, you know, we all know if there's somebody that somebody else tells us about and then word keeps getting around, then everybody starts turning to that same person. So with the Internet today, it's great to create things that increase your visibility. One is creating a website or creating a blog site, joining the social network. Submitting your articles to article directories, and I don't know if you're familiar with what those are, but those are online article directories are places where other website owners go to find material called content, which is just, you know, they're looking for articles to put up on their own sites and in their own e-zine so that they don't have to write every single piece that they post themselves. So if you're an author or writer wanting to get known online, one of the things I first suggest is start writing articles for article directories, because you put a little resource box at the end of your article that has links to your site. And so when people go to these article directories, they get to use your article for free, but the stipulation is they publish the article with your byline and your resource box. So when I've got articles out on article directories that with different topics in mind, let's say I'm wanting to track someone to the National Writing for Children Center site because that's one of the sites that I keep up, then I will write an article about, maybe 5 tips for writing for children. And then in my resource box, I'll say, for more tips for children, visit the National Writing for Children Center site at, and then I list the URL. And that starts getting my name out there, because some well-known e-zines and other publications, like even Writer's Digest or different places, may use some of my articles. And even though I'm not getting paid for it, that free advertising is helping to build my platform, my visibility, and therefore my credibility as a writer. So they're just all sorts of things. That would be one of the easiest things for people to do just starting out.
Great.
Oh, sorry. I was just going to make a comment here that certainly with the search engine optimization, that being on a blog or your website is certainly one way of getting it out there, especially if you can really focus on what you want to do.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Great. And we'd like to interrupt our broadcast for just a moment to announce our first collaborative book, Authors Access, 30 Success Secrets for Authors and Publishers, edited by Irene Watson, Tyler Tischler, and me, Victor Volkman. This book contains the distilled wisdom of more than 24 guests to our show in an easy-to-read, easy-to-understand reference, organized into chapters that reflect the life cycle of your books. Authors Access, 30 Success Secrets for Authors and Publishers, lets you learn about the best practices and avoid pitfalls in writing, editing, cover design, marketing, book reviews, online presence, genre and children's books, and many other key topics. As a special thank you, we'll include a free Best of Authors Access CD-ROM, jam-packed with MP3 files from all our shows. And for more information about the book, just go to our homepage, www.authorsaccess.com, and click on Success Secrets in the upper left corner. And now we return you back to our show. Let's talk a little bit about when you're actually in the process of being a freelance writer. What does a typical working day look like for you in terms of things going on?
Oh, busy. Very busy. I think that I always tell people when you become a freelance writer, you're going to be spending your time either working on assignments or looking for new assignments. Because if you're not constantly looking for new work, then the work dries up and you don't have anything to do. So just because you're busy today doing an assignment, you can't stop looking for new assignments because you want new ones coming in all the time. And there's a little bit of a learning process there in terms of understanding how much you can handle so you don't overload yourself, and also finding enough work that the work doesn't dry up. So that's kind of a balancing act that you have to get good at when you're a freelance writer. So generally, I may spend the morning answering email to see if I've got assignments or further directions from an editor that I'm working with on a project. Then I will go online to different job boards to see what kind of freelance writing work is available. I also subscribe to online newsletters that give me job information, and I network with a lot of different writers in different online listservs, so that when I'm looking for work and I say, you know, has anybody worked for this publisher? I'm thinking of querying them with this idea, or does anyone know if this publisher is assigning authors for new titles, that kind of thing. So part of it is it becomes easier to find jobs the more you start getting work, because then you've worked with editors, you've gotten to know other authors, and they see that you really are reliable and dependable. So So many times once you start working with, say, an editor for a certain magazine, if you're really good and dependable, you don't have to query that editor any longer for every single article you want to write. They will start calling you with things that they need a writer for and just say, you know, could you write this 20 or 1,200-word article on wedding tips for this magazine, whatever, and they will give you an assignment. And that's when it's really nice that you're not having to just send out so many queries day after day to get new work. You've got just maybe 4, 5, or 6 editors that you work with on a regular basis, and you still query them, but they're also sending you work. So it just kind of starts like that.
Yeah, you're managing a whole pipeline of things in progress and from concept to completion. Now, nowadays we have so many handy distractions. How do you, when it's time to hunker down, how do you isolate yourself from the pop-ups and everything?
Well, I think part of it, you know, you can check your email every 5 minutes, and you have to get out of that habit and just know that this is what I'm going to do. And I, when I'm coaching writers, I suggest that you have just certain times a day you're going to check email, and you have certain times a day for certain projects. And so you set a schedule. And I also, when I'm coaching students, I have them develop a weekly marketing plan because, like I said, you've got to be working on your assignments and constantly marketing to get new assignments. So I help them develop a plan every Sunday night, and then they know exactly what they're going to be doing. They know how much time they need to, say, work on a certain assignment during that week, how much time they need to allocate for looking for new jobs and that kind of stuff. So then you can just kind of, you know, fit it in and know what you're going to do that week. And then, too, one of the great things about working for yourself as a freelance writer, if you know that you need to do some assignments, but you want to go out and have lunch with a friend next week, or you want to take your child to the zoo or something, then you just work that into your schedule because you can, you know, you can get your writing done however you want to.
Yep, that's makes a lot of sense. Let's talk about what's the most difficult part of being a full-time writer?
I think you can get easily distracted, like you said. I think for people just starting out, the tendency is to give up too quickly if things don't happen real fast, and so they just, you know, lose direction, start second-guessing themselves. I think once you get really going with it, it's not that it's the hardest thing, but you're constantly managing your time. You have to be good at managing your time and also learning how to focus on one thing at a time, because you may have 3 or 4 projects lined up, but if you can't really focus on one at a time, you're not going to do a good job of any of them. And sometimes that can be challenging. I know if I've got a lot of things lined up and I've got a manuscript that has got a short deadline, I've really got to work on that, then basically I just tell my friends, you know, I'll see you in a month. Just don't call me. Don't come over. I've just got to hunker down and get this done. And that's hard for people who are sort of social and need their contacts. But sometimes you've just got to sit down and do the work.
Yeah, amen to that. Let's hear about your latest book, The Locket. How did you get the idea for this? Tell us about the writing process.
Well, The Locket is a historical novel for children, a middle grade novel. It's based on the Triangle Shirtwaist Factory fire that occurred in New York City in 1911 in the Garment District. And that factory was sort of a sweatshop, and it had all these young girls and young boys who were working in there. And over 100 of them were killed in this fire. And basically they were killed because the doors were locked and they couldn't get out. There were no fire escapes that were working, and the fire took place in the top 3 floors of the building, and the fire ladders and water hoses wouldn't reach. So many of the people jumped out of the windows to avoid the fire but crashed onto the pavement and died. So it was a tragic incident. And this book I did for Inslow Publishers, which is a school and library publisher. They mainly publish books that are sold to schools and libraries. And so a few years ago, I had done a nonfiction book for them on the Triangle Shirtwaist Factory fire. And then when they came out with this new historical fiction series, they contacted me and asked me if I would want to write a historical novel about the same event. So I thought, oh, that'll be great because I've already done the research. And when you write historical fiction, you've got a lot of research to do because even though you're creating fictional characters, they have to be true to the time and the period in which they lived. So I figured, well, I've done the research and I know, you know, what went on in this actual event, so it'll be fun to create the character. So I created a little girl named Galina, who is a Russian Jewish immigrant, and her family who live in New York City, and she has an older sister, Anya, who live, they all live together, and they both work at the Triangle Factory, and the fire breaks out, and I won't give away what happens, but the story follows her through the fire and all the events that occur after that. So it was really fun working on that, although it was just a sad story too because it was such a tragic event. But what I enjoyed doing with that story was making these characters come alive in the period of time that they lived and really showing what it was like, how hard people had to work back then who had just arrived in this country from other places and didn't have much money, couldn't speak English very well, maybe had skills that were things like, you know, they could sew or they were tailors or just different things like that, and they had to translate that into making a living for their family. So that's how I kind of came up with the story, was just based on all the people I had read about who lived about during that time when I was doing the research for the previous book that was the nonfiction book about that event.
Well, certainly I know that the young girls do love to read historicals, and it's really noticeable. And then as they get older, and especially right now, they're into the fantasy and vampire, and Twilight's coming out tomorrow, and all the kids are all excited, the older ones, you know, and they started. Which is just so different from what you're writing to what the older kids like. But I know that historicals are something that the girls like, too. So as a freelance writer and working full-time, we have a lot of listeners here that I'm sure are just, you know, wondering what their next step is and what they should do. And so what would a person, on average, what would their income be as a freelance writer on a full-time basis?
Well, that's really up to you and how hard you're willing to work, how consistent you are in finding jobs with well-paying markets. And I would just give you a, for example, when I started that summer, when I started working and lining up contracts and getting my resume out there and finding book contracts and magazines and all that kind of thing, by the end of the 3 months, I was earning about $6,000 a month. On a regular basis, and you know, that was just really getting in there and working hard. So I'd say, gosh, a freelance writer who's willing to do a lot of magazine work, maybe supplement that with some books for educational publishers, do school visits, do all these other things that come you know, with that, or speak at conferences, you can make $60,000-$70,000 a year comfortably working in your own home and working sort of a 9-to-5 day, but working, you know, not sitting at home and going out to lunch and playing solitaire on the computer and checking your email every 5 minutes.
And hoping that somebody will contact you, but they don't know about you. Yes.
Right. It's like getting your platform built, getting your websites built, getting your articles out there, putting all these things into place. And that's what I tell people when they sign up for my program. You know, you're going to see a lot of these little pieces that I'm going to help you put together. And they're like pieces of a puzzle that so that by the end of the 12 weeks when we work together, you've got this completed picture that's really going to, you know, be your career that you're creating. And so it takes time to get all those things into place. But also, when people are just starting out, most of the time their writing needs a little improvement too, if you want to know the truth, especially writing for publication. You know, they may have written in school, they may have done reports, they may have written for their little neighborhood newspaper or the PTA news or different things like that. But if they're just starting out as a freelance writer, there are some things they have to know about, you know, writing for magazines, writing for children's educational publishers, just different things that they're going to write for and try to get work with. They have to know sort of how to do that. And so that's something that I try to show them And I do that through teleclasses, and I have instructional CDs and all kinds of things. So for anyone just starting out, you know, there's all kinds of help available. You don't have to do everything yourself and know everything yourself. Just go out there and see what's around, you know, and network with other writers. See what they're doing. Learn from them. Join the social networks where there are other writers and get some help that way, because you can learn a lot and you can make connections with other writers.
Exactly. And that's the main thing, is just being going out there and getting to know these people. And like you say, social networking, for sure. So also I'm thinking here as I'm listening to you that as a freelance writer, there could be a lot of times that you would not be getting credit for the work that you do. So you obviously have to let that go, that your name mm-hmm. will not always be attached to the article or the whatever that you write. So then it takes me then to the ghostwriting, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
That's sort of, am I correct in saying that?
Right. Mm-hmm. And I have ghostwritten books. I ghostwrote a book, an economic dictionary for high school students was one thing I've ghostwritten. I've ghostwritten adaptations of things like A Midsummer Night's Dream for kids, which that was kind of an ordeal, but it was fun. Yeah, because that's a confusing story for adults, much more and yeah, things like that. My name didn't appear on the cover. I didn't get a byline, but that really didn't bother me, because I felt like, you know, I'm learning, I'm growing, I'm being paid to do this, and it's just part of what I'm doing. Certainly it is better, I think, if I'm really wanting to create a name for myself, for people to know who I am and have my byline on the books. But many people make a living strictly from ghostwriting, and so they're never credited for the work. They may just have something on the inside of the first page that says, thanks for editorial assistance from, you know, Suzanne Lawrence, and it sounds like you typed it or something when actually you wrote the book.
Yeah. Yeah. Is there a demand for ghostwriting?
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah, big demand for ghostwriting. I think the thing to learn there is just kind of get up on the markets and know what people are charging to do it, because you'll find that many times when people approach a ghostwriter, they are just unrealistic in what they are thinking it should cost them to have you write this book. And, you know, you don't want to write a book for $1,000 or $2 if it's something that's really going to require a lot of work and it's, you know, just a huge volume or something you've got to do. So find out what other ghostwriters are charging and how they charge. And, you know, you join groups that, of people that are doing that and get in with them and sort of learn the ropes from that, because that's just sort of a whole another category of writing. I don't do much ghostwriting. I haven't done a whole lot of ghostwriting. Mainly I'll write books for educational publishers. I write magazine articles. I just create my own information products and things like instructional CDs and workbooks, and that's another thing you can get into making money as a freelance writer, by creating your own products if you have some expertise in some area, or working for businesses, helping them create products that, you know, tell what that company or business that serves their, you know, their customers. For example, you know, maybe a guitar studio would want you to help them write a booklet on 10 tips for picking out your first guitar, something like that. There's just all kinds of things you can do. It's just thinking, what kind of things do I like to write, fiction or nonfiction, and who could I approach to start writing these kinds of things?
So that's a great finding, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Finding the need and matching that up with your passion for writing. I love writing nonfiction. I love writing for kids, and I also like writing fiction. So, you know, I just kind of have the best of all worlds when I start working for educational publishers, because many times, you know, I don't have to query them with an idea. They have a list of titles that they are looking for authors for. So I just contact these publishers and say, could you please send me the list of available titles you have? And then once I get that list, then I have to submit maybe a sample chapter and an outline to write the book that they're looking for an author for. And I think a lot of times people don't know that. They just think all these books that are out there were the ideas of the author themselves, and they don't know there's a big market for writing books that that publishers want to have written. So they need to tap into those markets, too.
That is such a good idea, and I think we'll just kind of leave it at that and let the listeners, if they're interested, search out that market, because I think that what you've just given them is some really good ideas.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, as I was listening to you, too, that really, when you're talking possibly making $60,000 to $70,000 per year,
mm-hmm.
writing a book and having it published, you would never make that much. Unless, of course, you became a bestseller, and that doesn't happen the first year, but or the second year, or, you know, ever.
Mm-hmm.
But when you're talking, if people really want to write, love writing, and are good at it, this is actually a better way to go than attempting to publish a book. That's
right.
a big
mm-hmm.
struggle. So,
mm-hmm.
Well, thanks, Suzanne. This has been just really insightful. And before we close, let's talk about your website. So give us your website addresses so that our listeners can go and check you out.
Okay, yeah. And I have different articles and things for freelance writers that they can just download and read on my site. If they are wanting to become freelance writers themselves, they can just go to my Working Writers Coach site, and that's just www.workingwriterscoach.com. So that's for people who want to write as freelance writers. If they're looking for children's writing, I have the National Writing for Children Center site, and that gives information for people who specifically want to write for children. And the URL for that site is just www.writingforchildrencenter.com.
That's great. And your own personal, again, is Working Writers, more than one writer, coach,
mm-hmm.
workingwriterscoach.com.
Right.
Great. Thanks again, Suzanne. It's been great.
Thanks so much for having me.
Paper here and going over it.
Oh, it's fun. I always love to talk about writing. That's the thing. I think writers love to write, but they love to talk about it almost as much as they love writing.
Exactly. And people wanting to write can certainly glean from a lot of information from what you just told us tonight.
Well, good. Good. I hope so.
Yes. You're welcome. Okay, you've been listening to another podcast edition of Authors Access, where authors get published and published authors get successful. We'll be back on the air December 4th, 2008, on our biweekly schedule, when our topic will be Crafting Travel Guidebooks, and our guest who will be joining us is Barbara Hudgens. You can learn more about all of our guests on the Authors Access website, which is authorsaccess.com. We'd love to hear from you about tonight's show. Please send us your questions and comments to info@authorsaccess.com. Authors Access is a joint production of Reader Views Incorporated and Loving Healing Press.
And for Reader Views, this is Irene Watson in Austin, Texas, saying good night.
And for Loving Healing Press, this is Victor Wolfman in Ann Arbor, Michigan, wishing you all a good evening.